Session number 11440, Reel 1.
Mr. Walter Hare, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr.
Yes,
Hare?
I was born in York on the 28th of December, 1897.
And what did your father do for a living?
He was a brickworks manager.
And what do you remember about your early childhood?
Well, I can remember when I was about 2 years old, moving, my father got a new job. He'd been at Foggathorpe, but he got a new job at Northallerton. And we went by train to Northallerton when I'd be about 2 years old. And the house we were going, the brickworks, was about 2 miles out of Northallerton itself. And we did that walk, and we stayed for our teas at the house. And I remember she gave us, after a long train journey, she gave us radishes for our tea. I can remember all those radishes even now. Well, we did this long walk. It was a very big house. I have a photograph of it now. And then we settled down there, of course. And when I was about four years old, I went to school.
How many were there in the family altogether?
I had another brother then, older than me, 18 months older than me. But then, years later, I had a younger brother, 5 years younger than me, you see.
Do you remember much about the sort of living conditions you had?
Yes. With no running water, we had a pump and a well about 100 yards away from the house. And later, as I got older, my job was to keep water supply for both washing and bathing and everything, you see. The toilet was 100 yards away as well, an earth toilet, of course. And I remember that I'd be about, I think, 12 or more years old. We moved to another house at Carewood, and the first thing my mother greeted me with was, "We've got running water." Now, she'd never had running water up to then. We'd moved about from place to place, you see. But brickworks were so isolated they didn't have a means. Like, with no electricity, of course, with candles and paraffin lamps.
Did you have a room to yourself in the house? Your own bedroom?
A brother and I did. Yes, it was a four-bedroom house. It was a very big one.
And any servants?
Not for a long time. I should be about, 12 when we got our first girl.
What do you remember at school? You said you went when you were about 4 or 5. What
yes.
was your first school?
I went to Yaffeth. And I have a replica of a thing that was painted upon the wall. I can show you that if you like sometime. How much it cost to go. I think it was a penny, tuppence a week or something like that. I forget now what it was exactly, but we had to pay so much, you see, and farmers had to pay a little bit, children had to pay a little bit more than us. We took our dinners with us, of course. There was no school dinners in those days. We took sandwiches and a bottle of cold tea. That was our midday meal, of course.
What kind of an education did you get there?
Well, we had slates and slate pencils. And that was a little village school. And then when I got to be about six, my mother said, my brother was a bit older, she said, "It's time you moved to a bigger school." And we went to Northallerton School, which is about 2 miles the other way, which is a long way to walk to school. But we didn't mind. We're used to it. That was part of our life, of course. With no transport, with no cars, anything like that, you know, in those days.
And what was it like at that school?
Very good. With a very good schoolmaster, a chap called Farndon. And he was very keen on music. And so, he was in the church choir. And he got me into the church choir because he said I had a good voice. And after a while, I entered for competitions, solo sight singing. And I have the records of it. I got the first prize for 3 years running, sight reading. And 1 year, and I have it in a Messiah we bought me for some of the money, I was the only competitor to get full marks during the whole of the tournament. So, and I was very vexed at the time because the money I won, he bought books with it and I wanted the money to spend. But now I'm glad that he bought me books because every time I pick me, and I've sung in that Messiah dozens and dozens of times, of course, belonged to a cult society. Every time I pick it up, I see my name in it. He wrote in it, you see. So it's there.
What about the rest of your education there?
Well, it was just general. I mean, I was never brilliant, but I wasn't one of the worst in the class, if you know what I mean. I did everything I had to do reasonably well.
Did you have a favourite subject other than music?
Well, drawing. I like drawing. And I still do a bit. I think music was the main thing that I was keen on.
Were you in any of the boys' organisations, like the Boys' Brigade?
Yes, I was a Boy Scout.
When did you join the Boy Scouts?
Oh, I should be about 10, I should think.
So that would be about 1907-8?
Yes.
Mm. And what kind of activities, which pack did you join, or local?
Well, it was just an Italian pack. I don't know what name it was. I didn't stay in them long. I must own up.
What kind of activities did they do while you were with them?
Well, they did a bit of camping, but I never went with them. My mother was never keen on us going off camping or like that, you see. We just did trekking and that sort of thing, and walks, you know, in the country and that kind of thing.
Was there any military aspect to any of the sort of training the Boy Scouts gave you?
No, not at all.
Why did you leave? Do you remember now?
I just don't know why I left. I think I'd had enough.
were you in any other boys' organisation?
No.
Now, what year did you leave school in?
When I was 14.
So you'd have moved by there to...
We were still living in Northallerton. Yes. My father was still the brickworks manager. And I left... I left that school and I went to the grammar school. Now, when the exam was taken for grammar school education, I was ill. I'd got a kidney problem. I'd stones in my kidneys and I'd been off school quite a bit. So I never took my exam. And Ed Mass was very upset because he said, you'd have got your scholarship without any problem. And he had a word with my mother. And he said, do you think you could have pay for him to go to the grammar school, which they did. My mother started taking in a bit of sewing. She'd been a head milliner at Leacanthorpe's in York, and she was good at sewing, so she took a bit of sewing in for her friends, you see, and that paid for me going to the grammar school. And I left there when I was about 16.
What was the grammar school like? That must have been...
Northallerton. It was a good one. It was a very good Northallerton grammar school. I think they call him Dr. Bearder, the headmaster there. But I saw a job in a local grocery shop, apprentice wanted. So I thought, I didn't want to work in the brickworks where my father was.
Why not?
I didn't like the idea of messing about among clay and bricks and things like that. You see, they made draining tiles and roof tiles and chimney pots, a lot of fancy stuff as well, you see, but I didn't fancy it at all. My brother worked in it, my older brother, but not me. I wanted something different, and I wanted a job of some sort, to be a trained of something. So I saw this job offered, so I went and got it myself. My mother's a bit vexed, because she says, you shouldn't have left school, you know, you were doing well. I said, I know, but I want to be at work.
And what job was it you went to?
A grocer.
Where at?
Apprentice. At Walter Wilson's Limited, Northallerton. And
what did you have to do as an apprentice grocer?
Well, you had to learn everything there was to learn about grocery, about buying and where the stuff came from. You had to know where your products were grown and, you know. And it was I got four and sixpence a week, and it was a two years apprenticeship, you see. You never got anything more. You had to do your 2 years, which I did.
This was with a view to going into management then?
Going into an assistant for a start or something like that, you see. And I hoped eventually to be a manager, which when I came finally to Pontefract, I was the manager of a firm with five branches, and eventually I started a shop of my own.
So, but at this stage, you were just as an apprentice.
Yeah.
And you enjoyed the work from
there? I liked it, yes. Oh, yes, I was very... I wanted the job, you see, and so I got it myself, and I was keen on it.
So you'd be doing that job when the war broke out in 1914?
No, after that I left, because my parents moved. My father took on the job at Kaywood near Selby as a works manager there. And so I went... my mother wanted to take me with her, but the manager at the shop where I was at said no, he wanted to keep me because I'd passed my apprenticeship then. He said they wanted to keep me, and he said, you can lodge with us. So I lodged with the manager. And then later on, I think it'd be about, when I would be about 16, my mother decided that there was a job going at home with a branch of a Selby firm there. And so she got me a job there, and I got back home again.
And what year would that be? 19?
I think it would be about 1913 then, because we were still there when I was at Kaywood when the war broke out. You see.
Do you remember anything about the either the immediate period before the war broke out or the day war broke out?
No, not particularly. I remember we had to have. Blackout material. We hadn't to show any lights because there were zeppelins coming over. There weren't any planes as far as I know, but there was a bit of danger of Zepp raids.
Do you remember any sort of mood about the war breaking out though? Were people pleased on the, you know, at the time, August 14th?
No, I don't remember much about it.
Were there any German shops in Selby?
No, not that I know of.
So it didn't seem to make a big impact.
No, it didn't. It didn't affect. Well, living out in the country, it didn't affect us at all. Really, we didn't feel any effects of the war for some time, and still things began to be a bit short, you see. And then we began to hear about casualties, you know, and
were you aware of people joining up from Selby? You know.
Well, we lived in the village at Kaywood, you see. We weren't in Selby itself. So there would be one or two in the village joined up, of course. But I was only... I hadn't got to be 18 then, you see. I wasn't.
So it was all a bit at second hand?
All second hand, yes, yes. It didn't affect us. We weren't interested in it much.
Now, this blackout, when did that come in? You know, that you had to start blacking out for zeppelins. Do you remember when that was?
Well, I should think it'd be beginning of 1915, I should think. I remember we had a tent and we were camping out, the four of us, and I have a photograph of that tent with us there. We had a fire built outside, and I remember we heard a noise and we thought it was Zepp coming over, and we had to damp this fire out because we were cooking something on it, you see. And we knew that we hadn't to show any lights. But... as far as I know, there was no zeppelins come anywhere near us.
What were you doing camping out at that time? Were you
just for fun? There were my brother and I and two lads, and we had a dog. And the dog came to live with us. He left home and came to live with us, and took care of the tent while we were.
Now you said that there started to be shortages. Would you be particularly aware of that in your job at the grocery?
Yes, yes. Now the first thing we were short of was sugar, because I don't think we produced sugar beet in this country in those days, and most of our sugar came from with cane sugar, of course. Canes came from South America, I think. Tate and Lyle produced cane sugar, but no beet sugar, as far as I know. And beet sugar came from Austria. And we were without beet sugar that was the first thing we were short of. Lard later on, because that most of it came from America. And the shop I worked at, we did journeys among the farmers, of course, and we delivered stuff, horse and rolly for delivering, you see. And we'd been without sugar for, two or three weeks, perhaps longer than that, with no sugar at all. And then we had a big barrel of Scotch moist came in, soft brown. And the manager said to me, on the Monday of the journey, we did up to Sherburn in Elmet and round there, you see, farmers and little villages round there. He said, I think you'd better do the journey this morning because it was only manager of a branch of a firm, of a Selby firm. And he said, you can give a pound of sugar to families of two, and above that you can give them £2. So I went round and did my journey, and everybody seemed to be delighted. A bit of sugar, you see. Except one lady. And she said, why hasn't Mr. Dallin come? I said, oh, he's very busy at the shop. He sent me. She said, do you know anything I want then? She was one of those high and mighty, you see. She's nothing I want. I said, all right, because I was going to say with some sugar. Oh, he said, you can send me £4 of sugar. I said, I'm sorry, I can't send you £4 of sugar, only two. Put £4 of sugar down, she said. I said, I'm sorry, I can't. I can give £2 of families above two, you see. She said, you put £4 of sugar down for me, and I know that it'll be all right when he knows who it's for. So I said, well, I wrote it down in my book, but I said, I'm sure you won't get it. She says, I shall get it all right. And as I was going away, she said, you can send me a pound of lard as well. Well, I was young, and, and I thought, when I got back, I thought, I shall get into trouble and get back to the boss. So I said to him, he said, how are you going, Walter? I said, all right, I think, except to this lady, although she was. He said, what was the matter with her? I said, she wants £4 of sugar and a pound of lard. I said, and she told me to put it down and you would see that she got it. He said, did she give me a book? And he put his pencil through it like that. He said, she'll get nothing. And that was the first I had a notice of shortage.
And what year would that be?
That would be, I should think, 1915.
And what were the next things that started to become...
Well, then everything began to be short. We had to sort of... With no ration cards, not like that, we had to ration it out, you see, divide what we had so that everybody got a fair share of whatever there was.
So there was no rationing system organised by the government?
No, I don't remember any.
So how... Was it not difficult, I mean, for a grocer, I mean... Like he was running a business. If you offended someone important, they could take their custom elsewhere. Was that a worry?
It was a bit of a worry, but they knew very well there'd be no better off anywhere else, you see. You didn't get many people, as far as I know, nobody left us. They just accepted there was a war on and they were thankful for what they could get, you see. But living in the country, a lot of people had their own produce. They killed a pig, they kept their own hens, they grew their own vegetables and that kind of thing, you see. So we didn't feel a shortage. We kept a pig at home, of course. Always killed a pig every year and we had our own hens, so we'd always had plenty of eggs.
And even this woman, the high and mighty one, even she didn't leave you then?
She didn't leave us, no, she didn't leave us, no.
Do you know what she said when she found out that she wasn't getting anything?
No, I never heard, no.
Are there any other stories from your time, as a grocer's assistant at Selby, during those 2 years, 3 years before you joined up, that might sort of let us know what it was like?
Well, not one thing we used to do. Everybody's grocery order had a little packet of sweets in. We had some jars of boiled sweets. We made a little cup with a piece of... have you ever seen now a cup made with a piece of paper, according to the size of the order, it was a big one, the children, with a nice lot of boiled sweets in. And if it was a small order, maybe it was smaller children, we just put a little packet in, you see. But everybody... grocery order, got a packet of sweets.
Free.
And then that suddenly stopped, because sweets were not available. Sugar was short, you see. So we had, and that was an outcry. Everybody wanted to know what had happened to the sweets, because the kiddies, you see, when they looked, that was the kiddies went into the grocery order, no sweets, you see. But everybody had stopped it.
How did the, this might seem strange, but how did the ordering system work during the First World War? What happened? How did you balance your books? When did they pay? And how did you deliver?
You took a grocery, you took a book out, everybody gave them an order. They paid for last week's when they ordered this week's, you see. Everybody had 1 week's groceries owing. And they didn't get last week's unless they paid last week's, you see. So we didn't have any bad debts. Nobody could run any bad debts up, because if they didn't pay the grocery, they didn't get any more. That was the finish of it, you see. And they couldn't go anywhere else, because they knew very well if they hadn't, they couldn't, nobody else would take them on until they could prove that they'd paid for what they'd already had somewhere else, you see. With a book with the name of the firm on the top, you see, John Wetherill Limited, Selby. And we wrote, everybody's order was written down in that book, you see. And then the bill was totaled up. With no adding machines in those days, we totted it up ourselves, you see.
And the time you took it, or would you go back to the shop to tot it up? Oh,
we're back to the shop, you see, and whatever you put into the order, you see. If it was a case of sharing out, you had to say to people you can only have half a pound of butter, and they'd ask if they could have a pound, you see. So you couldn't take the official order, you couldn't tell them exactly how much they'd have till you got back and saw what stock you had to share it out. And then you put it down, what it was, and added it up, and that bill was put in with the people's grocery order.
And how was the grocery order delivered to the people?
Either with an errand boy and a cart, like an errand cart, or we had a delivery lorry with a lorryman, and he, with two horses, you see, and he looked after the horses, and we did a lot of corn and cattle keg and stuff like that among the farmers, you see. So we had a biggish warehouse with all bags of maize. And
so you were an agricultural merchant as well?
Yes. We supplied all kinds of things like that, you see, bran and sharps and pig food, all kinds of things like that, you see, apart from groceries.
So you wouldn't go out with that? So you just send the bill with the errand boy or errand man?
Yes.
And then they pay it? Would they pay it straight away when they got the food then?
Farmers would very likely come in. Farmers maybe would have the fortnight's credit, you see, and then they'd come into the shop and pay. Or if you called on them for an order, they'd pay you then, you see.
For the next order, they'd pay.
For the next, yes.
Wouldn't it have been simpler just to give the errand boys the book rather than you go out separately?
No.
Why was that?
Because the errand boys couldn't have done it. They weren't sufficiently trained, you see, to, you know, they couldn't price the stuff out. Half a pound of butter at so much a pound, you see. In those, they might have got half a pound. If it came to three quarters, they'd have been done for. They wouldn't have been able to reckon it up, you see. So they were errand boys, pure and simple.
Now, where did you get the produce from your shop? I mean, where was it supplied from?
Well, ours was a branch shop, so we got it all direct from our head shop in Selby, you see. So we're no problem there. A bit of local stuff we bought as well, you see. We bought our own eggs locally, and we got a bit of farm butter, of course, locally as well. The farmers made butter in those days, you see. And
what did your actual shop look like? Was the shop separate from the warehouse, or was it?
Oh yes, the warehouse. Yes, the shop was. It was a double-fronted, double-windowed shop, still there, and the warehouse was down at the back.
And you had the produce on the shelves, I presume, within the
shop. Yes.
How many assistants did you employ? There was the manager, and then you were the assistant manager, were you?
No, I was only an assistant. No, there was other two besides me in the shop.
Manager,
three of us.
Three of you?
Yes.
How many errand boys?
One.
How did you come to join the army then?
Well,
that's the next thing.
My brother and I and two other lads, friends of ours, they were brothers, two brothers, friends of ours, and we had a bit of talk while we were still camping out in this tent, and we said to them, we said it's about time we joined the army. I think it's, you know, it's been going on long enough, we might be able to help a bit. Let's all join together so that we can get into the same battalion, you see. So we went into Selby, the four.
Hang on, so your motivation was sort of a feeling you had to do your bit?
Yes, that was the only reason, yes. We felt it was time we did our bit, you see.
What had made you feel that? Did the recruiting process happen?
No, there was a recruiting process, but pointing at you, see, Kitchener, it wants you see. No, I don't think that had any effect. I think it was the effect that we began to realise that there were people round about us who were being killed and wounded, with casualties in the neighbourhood, you see. And we decided it's time we went. So we all four went into Selby together, and we all enlisted together at Selby.
Where did you enlist in Selby?
Well, I can't tell you offhand. I have the particulars where I listed. I have the...
Is it just a recruiting office?
The recruiting office, yes. It was a recruiting office. Right. It was not connected... Well, it would be in a way connected with the army thing, but it wasn't an army office at all. It was just a recruiting office.
And what was the date you joined up?
22nd of May, 1916, when we joined up.
And that's the date on the attestation paper you've got?
Yes, yes.
Now, when you joined up, did they give you a medical?
Not then, no. We after that we'll get our calling up papers.
So this is when you were tested.
We attested, yes. We didn't get any calling up papers then. Now they came, a week or two later, I think.
So all that happened this first time was that you just signed
You signed on. You got your name down. You see that you'd attested. You joined up.
And did you join up at the time for any specific regiment?
You couldn't. No, you had no choice.
So you just signed as willing for service.
As willing to serve. Yes.
And you went back home then, I presume?
Went back home, yes.
And what did your parents say? Because you hadn't asked them, had you?
No, we got into trouble because they didn't want us to, risk our lives, I think, you see. But we thought we'd done the right thing and they accepted it, of course.
Was your mother upset?
Yes, she was a bit upset at first, you see. And then she fell in with it all right. My father didn't bother. He didn't bother a great deal, you see. He was sorry that my brother left because he worked in the brickworks with him, you see. But didn't bother so much about me.
What about your work? You know, your grocers?
Oh, well, I just told them I'd joined up and I'd be leaving, when they called me up. About a fortnight later, I think it was, you see.
What did he say?
He didn't object to it at all. I think he was rather pleased in a way because he was a younger man, the manager. We got a new manager, he was a younger man. And I think he was rather afraid that he would have to be go as well, you see. But if I went, I was the only sort of... He had a younger boy than me and they had two girls working as well, you see. So it was all right, really, and he didn't have to go if I went. I think managers were exempt, you see, if they were in an official position like that. So I think it suited him all right.
What about your friends in the town? What did they say?
Oh, well, they were all right about it. I was caught in, of course.
What did your girlfriend think?
She was she agreed that I'd done right. And when I got my calling up papers...
That was in June then, 1916.
Yes.
2 weeks later.
Yes,
What happened then?
I had to report at Fulford Barracks at York.
Fulford,
yes. The vexing part about it was that all four of us went to different units. I went to West Yorks at York. My brother went to down somewhere in Staffordshire. Alf, another friend, went into the Royal Scots. And his brother went into the West Riding Regiment. So instead of being all together, we'd planned, we're in four different places, you see. We were a bit vexed at first, but it maybe turned out for the best, because we weren't all under the same regiment, you
now,
see.
Now, when you were called up, did it tell you which regiment you were going to be in?
West Yorks.
So you knew then?
I knew then, yes.
What did you think then? Had you heard of the West Yorks?
Oh, I knew about the West Yorks, yes. And I knew the barracks, the headquarters, were at York, you see, as well. It's Fulford, been past many a time. So we knew. I don't know how we went, how I got there to the barracks at York. I just don't know, because there were no buses or anything like that in them days. And my mother and my father had a little pony and trap. I think they maybe took us in, you see.
Do you remember what you took with you? I mean, to join up?
Well, I took some writing paper and a pen. I think that's about all.
Would you be in your best suit or your working clothes? Or
oh, I'd go in my best suit, I expect, you see, yes. Because we did have a Sunday suit in those days. we didn't wear jeans.
And what happened when you got to Fulford Barracks?
Well, first of all, somebody, an NCO, took sergeant and took you into the quartermaster stores, and he just, there were one at home working there, just looked at you and threw you a pair of trousers and a tunic and a cap and whatever you wanted. You see, you moved along, and each one threw something at you.